It is time for the single coolest sports show in the country, The Life with Matt Bonner, presented by Concord Orthopedics.
You've got Matt Bonner, who my notes tell me is a sandwich blogger named Red Mamba. I mean, how can you not like a guy like that?
And the Red Rocket knocks down the triple.
Red Rocket, I'm telling you, Red Mamba might not miss a shot. He might not miss a shot.
Just like in politics, in the instructional video business, you need credibility. You want credibility? I'll give you credibility. Hey, Tim, what's my nickname?
The Red Rocket.
No.
The Sandwich Hunter.
No. Try again.
The Medium Fundamental.
And welcome to The Life with Matt Bonner, presented by Concord Orthopedics. I am Chris Ryan. Appreciate you joining us for the show. I am in Florida at Fort Myers with Red Sox spring training. Matt joins us from San Antonio, Texas, as the Spurs, the Celtics, the NBA, and the stretch run. We're getting closer and closer to the NCAA men's basketball tournament, and of course spring training taking place down here in Florida, and I can report that there is not a lot going on at Red Sox camp. There's just, it's not a lot at all going on. The team is pretty much set. I mean, you have no new additions to the team. You have a couple subtractions, and Craig Kimbrell as well as Joe Kelly, Ian Kinsler left as well. One important individual coming back, of course, is Dustin Pedroia, but not a lot going on, which is good for the Red Sox. Just kind of get things going here at spring training. Matt, how are you?
I'm doing great. How are you?
Great. I appreciate joining us for the show. And in the middle segment of the program, we'll hear from a number of your Boston Red Sox, including Mookie Betts will join us in the program. We'll hear from World Series hero Steve Pierce, the World Series MVP as well, and also Nathan Eovaldi. And we'll check in up at Yankees camp with Aaron Judge as well, literally one of the biggest stars in baseball. We'll start with men's college basketball. And I'm surprised at a story that is not getting the attention that it probably deserves. And that is, you know, the FBI continues to look into the practices of men's college basketball. And the LSU head coach was allegedly caught on a wiretap making discussing a arrangement with the player, and this after the situation with Rick Pitino, and it seems like they just need to get, you know, this all this stuff kind of out in the open and to get this out of the way. I mean, this is a multi-billion-dollar industry, well, and let's just get this out of the way. And it's interesting because I watched the report on it on ESPN while I was flying down here at the airport. And it went from discussion of this into, well, these are the games that are coming up this weekend. I'm like, no. Like we need to stick on the we need to stick to what's going on here because it's a problem.
Well, two things. The reason why it's not getting the attention. Number one, there's too many people getting rich off the game, off college basketball, off the kids. So they don't want any negative publicity. It's going to hurt that business.
And that includes the media.
Yeah, you can call it an amateur sport, but it's a business. It's a multi-billion dollar business. And no one wants to do anything that's going to hurt that business. So that's number one. Number two, I don't even think the public cares that much. Like, I think to me, it's such a farce that the public is like, come on, you got coaches making like $6 million a year. The NCAA tournament alone is $1 billion TV revenue. You're using the kid's likeness. You know, everybody's making money off them, and you're going to make a big stink because some kid got $25,000 to go to the school or whatever. It's like, come on. I mean, you proportionally compared to the amount of money coming in, it's literally peanuts. So I think people are just like, come on, like, really? Like, there's just kind of over it. And furthermore, I think people look at it as maybe a violation of the rules, but a crime. It's like, are you a criminal because you gave a kid some money to come to your school?
And I think who gives people, the money too? Like, is it a?
Yeah,
I assume it's like.
I think people know that, like, it's pretty widespread. Like,
no, I agree.
I honestly I have no evidence, but it seems like people. It's kind of like something everyone just accepts, like it's part of the game within the game, I guess. So you know, it's crazy. It's gotten to the point where there's indictments and FBI investigations and all that. But if people aren't messing with the integrity of the game, like point shaving and that kind of stuff, then it just doesn't seem like that huge of a deal in the grand scheme of what college basketball is.
I think you bring up a key point in regards to point shaving, particularly with the proliferation of sports gambling, and we'll get to that in a second. But I think that you're right. There's an assumption that that these programs do this, and individuals are willing to look at it kind of, meaning fans are, and alumni are willing to look at it as kind of a trade-off, and or they think that their program is not the one that's doing it, and it's, you know, it's the other programs that are doing it. And the problem again is that the players are not compensated. And there is not that element. And that, in my view, is kind of screaming here. In terms of being a crime, I mean, it depends on how much money is being given. I think that there's a feeling amongst investigators that this is a problem, obviously. There's tax evasion issues, money laundering. I mean, these are significant crimes and have brought down, you know.
They are, but they aren't. If we're talking $25,000, versus millions of dollars or billions of dollars that everyone else is making off the kid, you can't tell me tax evasion is a huge concern. Like, what's the income tax rate on $25,000 or whatever?
Mm-hmm.
Or what if it's after tax dollars? What if the coach is making $4 million a year? You know, divide that by 24 paychecks. I don't know what that is off the top of my head, but like, you know, $200,000 a paycheck.
Yeah, I mean,
you already paid taxes on it, and then you give it to a kid to come to your school, then he has to pay income taxes on it. Like, I just don't buy the income tax evasion angle of like, whoa, this is serious. It's tax evasion. I'm just not buying that. That's all basically what I'm saying.
I'm saying is, if we're just talking about the $25,000, yeah, that's not a huge deal. But if it's more money than that, or if there's other illegal activities that are taking place, that it is a big deal. And I think that, again, you just, as the case with other investigations, you have to see where, you know, the investigation goes. But all of this is very solvable if a plan is pushed forth to compensate the players the way that they should be compensated. And that doesn't, as I've talked about before, and we've talked about that on this show, it's kind of similar to what I've talked about
but,
in regards.
But yeah, that's the point. Like giving the players some money under the table to come to your school is a symptom of the illness.
Right.
And the illness is the current system.
Right. So I think that, you know, this, it should get a lot of attention and focus so that there is a push to compensate the players the way they should be compensated. And that doesn't mean you have to pay them while they're in school, but it does mean that they should receive, as if we've talked about before, full health care for the rest of their lives. And they should also receive compensation,
they should have the
a pension, basically.
They should have the right to have a voice in the dealings.
That's where you start.
Bargaining.
Yeah, no, that's
the collective bargaining.
Right. That's where you start. And then I think that's based upon the schools, whether it's, you know, there's Iona, there's UNH, then there's Villanova and Duke. And based upon the income of the basketball program, I feel that they should receive a pension. And the players, obviously, that go on and play in the NBA and receive millions of dollars, you know, they don't need the pension as much as other players. So the likeness aspect of things may get worked out there. But the in my view, they should receive a pension so that they are compensated for the rest of their lives, and that they won't have to deal with aspects of poverty and other things that come after basketball if things don't work out.
Yeah, see, I mean, I like where you're going. You're taking it a step further from where I'd even start. Just like I said, having rights, basic rights, the right to collectively bargain on your own behalf, the right to your own likeness, to profit off your own likeness, the right to use that likeness to hire an agent and sign your own endorsement deals and appearances and run your own basketball camp so you can capitalize on your popularity while you're in school. That has nothing to do with the school. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Like
them making basketball cards of you and you get make a little money, or you can run your own basketball camp, or you can do car dealership ads. Like, what does that have to do with the school and the NCAA and all that? You know what I mean? Like, you should be allowed to do that, and then go from there and figure out you know, do the profit, you know, the big conference schools break off and form their own separate league, where they have the revenue and money to be able to pay their players a little bit, or like you said, create a trust or a pension or something. Do you do that? You know, how do you figure it out from there? I don't know, but I think step one is just give players their rights.
No, you're right. This is The Life of Matt Bonner presented by Concord Orthopedics. I'm not going to do exactly what ESPN did and transfer from this discussion into the NCAA men's basketball tournament. So we'll do a little Patriots in between to break it up. Trey Flowers leaving the Patriots for the Detroit Lions. It looks like Danny Amendola is going to, after being released by the Dolphins, also going to go to Detroit. And, of course, that is where Matt Patricia is at, former Patriots defensive coordinator. So Trey Flowers is a big loss for the Patriots, Matt. I don't think there's any question. He was arguably their best defensive player. He's coming into his prime. You know, his sack numbers were not huge, but his impact is, and he's a good locker room guy as well. Do you feel that that's a loss for the Patriots, a big loss, or is he just a part of a Patriots machine that churns out great players and he'll be replaced?
I think it's a big loss, but I think the latter is true.
Yeah,
I think they have a system, a machine, where they're going to figure out someone else that they can plug into there who's going to step up. And this is what happens when you win championships. We've talked about it a lot because Boston teams win so many championships. But when you win a championship, you become more in demand. Your value goes up, and due to salary cap constraints, it's impossible to keep the band together. Because you can't afford to, so you got to make tough decisions on guys you can't afford to pay, what other teams will pay, and you wish them the best, and you're happy for them that they can go out and get the money they deserve. But then, you know, that's what makes the Patriots so great, is Bill Belichick can find guys to substitute for those players and stay, you know, salary cap economically efficient yet effective at the same time.
Yes, it, because of what you just said, it is not a huge surprise to me that Trey Flowers is leaving. I liked him a lot as a player and as an individual, so it's obviously you want to have him still on the Patriots, but I'm not, you know, surprised necessarily that he's leaving. The other thing that you could tell from the show so far is that things are going much better for the Celtics because they have not been discussed until now. And that's the other aspect of sports. If it, just like the news, if it bleeds, it leads, and the Celtics not bleeding anymore. They went out west and they found themselves very similar to what happened with the Bruins. Bruins were on a good stretch before that, but they went undefeated on their West Coast swing, but against not as difficult competition. The Celtics have so far done the same thing. As we do the show here on Monday, they play in Los Angeles tonight against the Clippers, looking for a little payback against them. And the Clippers have been interesting in that you know, when they traded everyone, we expected them to kind of fall out of the playoffs, and this is meaningful for the Celtics because if they make the playoffs, they get the Clippers draft pick. But they've stayed in it in the West in that seventh spot.
Yeah, I mean, we've been talking about that a lot, obviously, because we've been tied with them for like the last 2 weeks, the Spurs. So, you know, they trade their best player. You think, all right, they're trying to get out of the playoffs so they can keep their
draft pick. And Avery Bradley, too.
And they keep winning. Yeah. You know, I try to always put myself in a player's shoes. And, you know, if you're a player on that Clippers team, and they were having a pretty good year, they were definitely a surprise team, you know, in that they got off to a hot start. They struggled, but then they fought back, and they were kind of in that 5-6 slot, 5-6-7 seed, and they stayed there. So, like, you know, your team trades your best player, you think they're giving up on you, and you can use that as motivation. Like, you know, we want to prove everybody wrong. And they've gone out and they've competed and they've had great energy. Gallinari's been healthy. Mm-hmm. I think that's been huge. He always gets hurt and he's been healthy for him all year. And they, you're right. They keep winning. You got to think it like at some point it puts the management in a tough spot because it's like, you know, do you start?
We did this to lose, guys. Like we did this.
Yeah,
we did this to get in the lottery.
Like, do you start pulling more strings or do you? But if you do that, it makes you look so bad.
Right.
You know what I mean? To the fans, to your players.
And the owner, Steve Ballmer, said that he wants to make the playoffs.
Well, Steve Ballmer's worth like $40 billion, so what he says goes, I'm sure.
Right.
So I think at this point, you just got to go for it, to be honest with you. I don't see how you can overtly try to lose at this point.
So anyway, the Celtics beat the Warriors. Warriors were coming off of an East Coast swing. No Klay Thompson, no James Looney in that game. But that's a big win for the Celtics. And the thing that I've noticed from Kyrie now is that Kyrie, rather than being the offense, is kind of playing more within the flow of the offense. And he is getting his teammates involved a little bit more. Is that something that you've seen from the Celtics playing? And what does that mean, do you think, long term?
I think it's important. They have enough talent where you don't want guys kind of standing around watching Kyrie. You know what I mean?
Yep.
I like the Celtics better when they're moving the ball. Kyrie's advancing it, facilitating some more, letting more guys do their thing.
Yeah. When he's a 20-10 guy, the Celtics are so much better than when he's a 30-6 guy.
Yeah, because then, you know, if you're those other guys, you don't feel like you have to force it when you catch it. It's not like, oh, I don't know when I'm going to get the ball again. I better do something. And you just kind of have better chemistry and flow and trust on the offensive end.
And Al Horford has been really good as of late. He says he's playing his best basketball as a member of the Boston Celtics, so that's key. He was dealing with a knee injury earlier in this year, and he's healthy and looking good. The Sixers had been struggling a little bit. They bounced back with a win against the Pacers. So when you look at the Eastern Conference right now and the NBA, I mean, again, Milwaukee continues to look great. When you're looking out west right now, what are you feeling about the Warriors? Are they in a little bit of trouble? They had a bounce back win against the Denver Nuggets, but can they be had, or do you expect them to turn on the switch when they have to?
I mean, it's still the Warriors, and they haven't been healthy.
Right.
People have been documenting some of their losses and inconsistency, but when all three of those guys are healthy, Klay Thompson, Steph Curry, and Kevin Durant, it's like, you know, we talked about the runs they go on.
Yeah.
You know, Durant hits a couple threes, Klay Thompson hits a three, Curry hits a three. That's like a 12-2 run in 2 minutes, and you lost. So I think it's one of those things. They're healthy going into playoffs. They're still definitely the team to beat.
All right, that is Matt Bonner. This is The Life with Matt Bonner, presented by Concord Orthopedics. Up next, we are at Red Sox camp. We're going to hear from Mookie Betts, the MVP of the American League, and the MVP of the World Series, Steve Pierce, Nathan Eovaldi as well. This is The Life with Matt Bonner, presented by Concord Orthopedics. Welcome back. This is The Life with Matt Bonner, presented by Concord Orthopedics. This segment of the show brought to you by Douglas Leonard and Garvey. If you've been injured, the most important decision you're going to make is who your lawyer is going to be. I encourage you to check out Douglas Leonard and Garvey at nhlawoffice.com. So over the next couple of weeks, we're going to be getting ready for the Red Sox opening the baseball season on March the 28th against the Seattle Mariners out in Seattle. And we're going to kick off that coverage with a couple interviews here from spring training. I'm in Florida and looking forward to these interviews, to having you hear these interviews here on The Life with Matt Bonner, presented by Concord Orthopedics. We'll start with the MVP of the American League, Mookie Betts.
What's it like for you to have basically this whole group back together again as you look to, you know, defend a championship? And how rewarding is it to see, you know, the organization say, this group is coming back, we're going to invest in it?
You know, it's a great feeling to know that you're going back to war with the same guys you just won a championship with, but it's a new year and new tasks, and so, I mean, I wouldn't pick a better group to go about those tasks, though.
How do you embrace the championship from last year going into the season? Do you turn the page, or do you take what you learned from last year and bring it to this season, or is this, in a lot of ways, a continuation of last year?
I think you just take what you learned from last year and you continue it, you know, kind of bring it into this season. Like I said, it's new challenges will come, and we just have to handle them as they come. But one thing that you do keep in mind, we're still playing the same game, and had to build on, remember what we did last year.
And obviously what you did last year in meeting those challenges, that allows you to have success moving forward. The acknowledgement, understanding that, you know, you have met those challenges previous. Is that the biggest thing that, you know, on the biggest stage you were able to shine and have success, and this team knows what it is?
Yeah. I mean, yeah, exactly. You know, we've been there, we've done it, so it's not like it's something new. But stuff is going to be tough to do again. I mean, it hasn't been done in a long time, but like I said, we got the group of guys to do it.
Do you feel like the team has the potential to be better than last year? I mean, you could say that about every championship team when you add, you know, certain individuals. Obviously, Pedroia coming back, you see the progression of young players. You could make that argument the team could be better, having Eovaldi and Pierce for the entire season. Do you see it that way, or will that be played out?
I think it just be kind of played out. I mean, obviously we had a really good team last year, and like I said, we returned a lot of guys. So, you know, the team that we were last year was a good team and managed to win. I don't think we necessarily need to be better. I just think we need to be who we are and let things kind of play out that way.
For you, coming off of the MVP season, what is your approach this year? Do you try to replicate what you're able to do in the past? And you're always kind of tinkering and trying to find ways and advantages and such. And this team plays a fast brand of baseball, and that's a lot of it comes from you.
Yeah, I mean, I don't necessarily have to be better if I can be something consistent, you know, especially at the top of the lineup, just be consistent. And I think, you know, good things will happen, especially with the guys behind me hitting. And I mean, that's just all I can really ask for, is just being consistent.
How much does your diversity of interest, do you think, benefit you as a baseball player, whether it's music, whether it's, you know, serving the homeless after a World Series game, the humble nature of who you are, music, bowling. Does that help you in the game, and if so, what way?
I'm not sure it does. You know, I think God just blessed me in many ways, and so I just try and find ways to enjoy myself and have fun, but I'm not sure at all. Those other things kind of translate to baseball. Maybe other sports do as far as being athletic, but I'm not sure the little weird interests translate.
And talk about your interests as well. Is it are you just intrigued by whatever is around you and you want to find out more about it, or are these things that have interested you for, you know, a long period of time and you just continue to kind of feed that interest?
I think I'm just intrigued, you know. Mind is a powerful thing, and so once mind kind of gets hooked on something, then, you know, I want to be good at it. You know, just kind of figure out why other people are good and those type of things.
So you'll look at something that other people do and say, okay, this is something that I want to try and see if I can be better than them at. Or you take like a strength of another individual and say, let me see if I can do this. As watch you play football in the off season on social media. So you'll take things and say, let me see if I can do this better.
I mean, not necessarily better, but I like to figure out why guys are so good at what they do, and sometimes I feel like I can be good at it. And so, you know, I kind of apply myself that way and try and be good at, you know, different things other than just baseball.
Final thing, have you noticed that, you know, your words or who you are as an individual and impact has, you know, become greater, obviously, as after winning the World Series, the MVP, and are you conscious of that and how you go about using that, you know, stage, so to speak?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's definitely something there, you know, if I speak, but you know, I think it's kind of comes with the territory and winning a World Series, and, you know, it's not just me, it's kind of everybody. We all kind of have a stage to kind of use our voices in different matters, and I think it's just something that we're blessed with, and just have to use it the right way.
Mookie Betts right there, and also had an opportunity to sit down with Steve Pierce, one of my favorite guys on the ball club. He, of course, is the World Series MVP.
Joe, my World Series MVP Steve Pierce down here at spring training. And Steve, the vibe around the Red Sox, obviously coming off a World Series championship, the team for the most part being back, it seems like there's just a lot of positivity around this group. Spring training can be a grind, but you guys seem to be enjoying yourselves.
Sure. And yeah, like you said, same team coming back, and, you know, we're all together, and you know, we're having fun. We know what it comes with, you know, being the World Series champion. You know, you got a bullseye on your back. You know, you have to. We're here to defend it, but, you know, we're positive. We're looking forward to the challenge, and especially with everybody back, we're all gearing up together.
What do you think the World Series championship last year means, you know, moving forward? There's always that debate of, you know, do you put it in the rear view mirror? Do you not talk about it? You know, do you embrace it? How do you kind of address the World Series championship from last year? Do you put it completely behind you, or the fact that you and other guys performed at the highest level in pressure situations, it leads you to obviously be confident about your abilities even more so than prior to that?
Right. You know, we had such a, you know, good, you know, record last year. You know, the thing was, you know, can you guys go through the playoffs? And yeah, you know, we showed why we were the best team. Now we're back. It's, you almost got to just embrace it. You know, we've been there, we've done that, but, you know, we want to do it again. So you know, like I said, we're all here together. We're embracing it, and we're preparing to defend the title. We're ready for it.
That seemed to be the big theme at the parade, is, and this happens with all the Boston Championship teams. You have the parade, and then that kind of feeds the desire to win more, whether it's, you know, the Patriots or you guys. And, you know, you just – is that the kind of the feeling you get where you won the World Series, and now that you've experienced that, the desire is even increased?
For sure. You know, we got a taste of it. You know, we've all experienced it. We want to do it again. You know, I think anything less is, you know, is a failure. You know, we won it, and we want to do it again. And we got the team for it, and we are really looking forward to the challenge that's ahead of us.
Remember when you were acquired, and we talked about the guys that helped to win championships, or there's the San Francisco Giants and the acquisitions that they had made, the 13 Red Sox, and that you could be that guy that brings the championship, and you had the depth guys that allow for success. What was that like to have that actually come to fruition, and how did your life change post World Series?
It was just a good fit. I filled the need of the Boston Red Sox. You know, a guy who come in and spell Mitch and play against left-handed pitching, which at the time the Red Sox weren't doing that well, and I've always been kind of a guy who could excel in that role. And so, you know, for me, it was just, you know, it was a great team meet, and, you know, come in here and I fit right in with the guys, and, you know, great chemistry in the clubhouse, and it was just a good fit.
In your view, why did the fit work, you know, so well?
Just the chemistry of the team. Everybody's young, and when I came over here, I played against these guys for so long, and so, like, I pretty much knew the guys coming over here, and all I really had to do was just learn the personality of the guys, and it was easy, you know, the way that this group works, and, you know, the way they want to win, the way they're open and they talk. It's, you know, there's a great definition of a really, really good team.
Right, and that's the thing. I mean, you look, and there's a lot of good teams obviously coming into the 19th season, particularly in the American League, the Astros, the Yankees, obviously all still there. But the balance of this group is what stands out first and foremost, whether it's on the pitching side, the defensive side, or, you know, the depth that this group has. It's not just, you know, in terms of veterans and young players. It's all across the board. Guys with different skill sets. You like to play a fast game, drive the count. And it seems that that's the strength of this team, is that, you know, it's strength in numbers.
For sure, you know, and that takes the pressure off of the J.D. Martinez, the Mookie Betts, where they feel like they can come to the park and they can just play ball. They don't have to, like, come to the park and knowing that they have to carry the team. Mm-hmm. They have to get their two hits a night, you know, in order for them to win. So, like, you know, with the depth that we have and, you know, the cast around all the, we have a lot of talent, but, you know, they can just come out here and play ball. And, you know, when they play ball, they're the best in the world. You know, it just shows, because every night, you know, it's somebody different for the Red Sox. It's stepping up, always making plays, and, you know, you can count on everybody in the lineup. Even when the starters don't play, you know, you can plug and play with somebody else, and you know, they step up, and everybody feeds on it. And just great, you know, chemistry. It's a great recipe for winning. It's contagious, you know, all throughout the clubhouse, and we feed on it.
What are the dynamics of your swing? I mean, I was watching you hit with Benintendi, and Benny has, you know, that nice, soft approach where he goes, you know, smooth through the zone. You attack the baseball, it seems. So how would you describe the dynamics of your swing, and why does it work?
Oh, you know, I think every player has their own style of play. You know, that's what makes this game so great. You know, and you could look at, you know, we're watching Bogey here right now. You know, he has a completely different swing and different work ethic than JBJ. You know, as everybody plays their skill sets and you know, what they do best. My best asset is I attack the ball. You know, Benny's he's a pure hitter. You know, he can take the ball inside, outside, up, down, low, way, just whatever he wants to do with it, and he can slap it all over the park. You know, I like to just attack balls in the zone. I like to drive the baseball. You know, sometimes that's my worst thing, and, you know, I try to look for balls on a tee, you know, and you don't get them half the time. You know, the pitchers, you know, at this level, they're very good. And so you have to go out there and, you know, you have to always adjust your hitting. But that's what makes this game great. You know, now we're looking at Devers right now. And, you know, his style is completely different than Nunez's style. It's everybody's are different, but that's what makes this game great.
Yeah, that's the amazing thing, as you referenced, is because what works for some guys doesn't work for others. And Alex was talking about about Devers and the fact that he wants him to swing a little bit lighter this year. He was attacking too hard and swinging too hard last year to be a little more loose. And for you, you know, attacking the baseball is what is successful. And that dynamic is so interesting. And looking at this group as a whole, he won 119 games last year. And, you know, you can always make the argument that the team is, particularly after a championship team, is going to be better. You could Pedroia back. Devers, you know, hitting third to start the, at least here in spring training. We'll see what the dynamic is there. How do you define, you know, expectations for a group? And do you have internal expectations of being better, looking at what the opposition is, or is it just a kind of a consistent approach?
I think, you know, we go out and we just play our game of baseball. And our game of baseball is fast-paced, and we like to, you know, go out there and just, you know, strike early. But, you know, in a perfect world, like, that's what you want to happen. So I think we make adjustments better than anybody, and, you know, sometimes stuff ain't going our way. We'll find ways to get it done. That being said, I mean, we have the ability to do that because we have really good pitching. Yeah. Also, you know, when you have Sell out there not giving up any runs and we're not scoring, and right. So we know, you know, we can – let's just, you know, keep grinding and we'll find ways to get it done. And, you know, we have the guys on the other side that can keep the other teams at bay and allow us to, you know, be the type of offense that we can be. I mean, it's just it's just great being a part of this club.
Yeah, the mental side of the game is so significant. And – the ability to take pressure off of one another, because we've talked about the hitting side, but the pitching side as well, where you know those guys are going to come in and are going to give you a chance to win. If you're able to score, you know, four runs, you're in a really good shape for, you know, for the ball game, perhaps even less than that. So is there an easing of the mental side from a personal standpoint when you know that the team is going to have success, or do you approach an at bat the same way each time?
Yeah, a little bit of both. You know, like, we have great pitching, you know, like great pitching, and they can hold teams at bay, and that just allows this team to do what it's capable of doing. And you know, we look forward to, they're all competitors out there, so you know, we know we don't have to press, so we can play our game of baseball, and that's something that we take advantage very well of, because we bring the consistency out there every night, because we know we're sending horses out there on the mound.
Right.
Where we don't have to press and try to create and play, you know, do the hitting runs and double steals and trying to create runs, because we know we got guys out there and we know what kind of the team we are, and we can stay that consistent team that we've been playing all along.
Final thing, one of the things that impressed, you know, me the most and so many Red Sox fans about you in the last postseason was, you know, your ability to kind of command the moment. And you watch the World Series DVD and listen to you talk about, you know, sending 50,000 people home with the double and to make it 8-4 in game four, you know, the home runs. What was your mindset in those moments, and how did you go about, you know, embracing the moment and creating this this legacy for yourself?
You know, it was, this is what you dreamed of as a kid, to be in the World Series, and I just embraced the moment. Didn't shy away from it. You wanted to hit, you know, you want to be the hero.
Yeah.
And you know, you don't grow up, you know, playing in your backyard saying like, yeah, I hope I get a base hit, you know, and you know, in a 5-2 ball game. It's like, no, like, you want to go there, you want to hit the home run, and you just going up there and wanting that situation and really, really locking in. I mean, when it's you know, it's almost like the less you do, the better your outcome is, and it's just locking in and say, hey, you know, I get up in that situation, wanting to be up there, and it's like, all right, you know, you get your pitch, hit it. If you don't, take it. And, you know, I know it's a lot easier said than done, but, you know, at the time, at the moment, you know, when you're in it, it's like, oh, you prepared your whole life for this moment. Like, let's go out there and let's do it. Take advantage of it.
Steve, great to see you.
Well, thank you for having me.
All right, Steve Pierce right there. This is The Life with Matt Bonner, presented by Concord Orthopedics. I am Chris Ryan. Thanks so much for joining us for the program. We're going to return more interviews as we take a look at the Toronto Blue Jays camp with Bo Bichette, one of their top prospects. He had a fabulous day against the Minnesota Twins on Saturday as he hit two home runs in that contest, including a leadoff home run in that game. And before that, a conversation with one of the biggest superstars in baseball, Aaron Judge, to hit up to Yankees camp. This is The Life with Matt Bonner, presented by Concord Orthopedics. Welcome back. This is The Life with Matt Bonner, presented by Concord Orthopedics. I am Chris Ryan. Appreciate you joining us for the show. Without further ado, here is my conversation with one of the biggest stars in baseball. He is the Yankees' Aaron Judge.
joined by the Yankees, Aaron Judge. Obviously, Yankees, Red Sox, we're going back and forth. But once again this year, how much fun is that for you, the rivalry, and having those two teams at, again atop the American League East?
That's baseball for you. You know, Yankees, Red Sox, you know, one of the biggest, if not the biggest rivalry in sports. And, you know, especially now, you know, when we both got, you know, high-powered teams with good offenses, good pitching, and just makes it for a lot of fun. You know, the fans are always into the game, so it's just, those are my favorite games to play.
Do you see them being a little bit ahead of you at this point in time, World Series champions coming back with the same roster, or do you feel that, you know, we're starting over again and things are going to be different?
Yeah, you know, they won the AL East last year. You know, mm-hmm. they're going to be on top, you know, so that's our main goal is, you know, go out there and win our division. You know, they won the division last year and went on to win the World Series, so, you know, our main goal is to go out there and, you know, try to win the division first.
For you, do you set goals going into the season as to what you want to achieve numbers-wise, what you want to accomplish during the course of the year, and is that what you do, or how do you kind of stay motivated throughout the course of the season to get through the process?
Yeah, I always, every year, set, you know, statistics and different types of goals, you know, on, you know, average RBIs or, you know, driving guys in, runs, anything like that. You know, I always try to set goals. And, you know, for me, I just try to take it month to month, series to series. You know, if I break it down like that, it's usually a little easier for me to, you know, just kind of stay focused on that. Because sometimes you kind of get caught up in the bigger picture when you're looking at your average, you're looking at this, and you're like, well, I'm only hitting this when I really want to be hitting this. But if you just take it, you know, one day at a time, that's like I usually try to do, man, it kind of simplifies things and makes it a little easier going through the season.
Watching some old school high school footage of you, football and also basketball, how much do you think that helped you to be the guy that you are today in Major League Baseball, having those multiple sports?
Yeah, just being an all-around athlete. You know, I see a lot of kids nowadays, you know, going in at like 9 years old, they're already focusing on either basketball or baseball or one sport. And, you know, that's good, you know, kind of focus on one sport. For me, you know, I just love being outdoors. You know, I loved, you know, I was 9 years old, I'd get tired of baseball. You know, I couldn't wait for basketball season to come up. And then once basketball season, you know, couldn't wait for football to come around. So I feel like, you know, each one, you know, kind of helped each other, you know. So the conditioning I did in football got me ready for basketball. And the basketball conditioning and quick movements kind of got me ready for, you know, the explosive movements in baseball. So I feel like they kind of fit hand in hand.
Finally, you and Mookie Betts is the great argument that exists now. Which right fielder would you rather have? Yankee fans say Aaron Judge, and obviously the Red Sox fans say Mookie Betts. But you guys are very similar in terms of your approach, how you care about people. Have you, you know, bonded with him at all? And do you see that as being kind of a relationship that's important, given both of your star stature?
Yeah, Mookie's one of the faces of baseball, man. And you know, I got a lot of respect for him, you know, what he does, not only as a player, but as a person. Like you said, man, he's just, this respect he has for the game, you know, the respect he has for his city and his teammates and stuff. You know, you love competing against guys like that. You know, those guys are going to go out there and give it 110% every single play. And, man, that just makes it more enjoyable when you got guys like that. You're competing against them. So it's been fun over the years getting the chance to play against him and watch what he does and learn from him. And it's going to be fun the next couple of years for sure.
Aaron, great to see you.
Yeah, Chris, no problem.
Thanks.
Aaron Judge right there from one of the biggest stars currently, and a guy that did play in Manchester against the Fisher Cats when he was with the Trenton Thunder, to an individual who played with the Fisher Cats last year as a part of their squad that ran the table in the postseason, went 6-0, and won the Eastern League Championship, and he is making a lot of noise at spring training. He is Bo Bichette.
Joined by Bo Bichette. And Bo, talk a little bit what spring training has been like for you this year. What have been your focuses, and how do you see the results coming?
Yeah, just to, you know, continue to improve as a player, learn as much as I can, you know, take it as an experience, but at the same time, you know, compete, and I think I've done a, you know, pretty good job of that so far.
Talk about the compete side of things, because there's obviously, you know, where you project yourself, and you look at obviously the depth and so forth, and project yourself and so forth, but you also want to make that statement, obviously, that I'm ready, and I'm ready to go.
Yeah, no doubt. You know, my meeting with Charlie, I told him, you know, I understand the dynamics of the team and everything, but, you know, I'm here to try and make a team. You know, that's the only way I know how to go about things is, you know, playing as hard as I can, you know, working hard as I can, and trying to, you know, just show them that I'm ready to go whenever they need me.
In regards to playing shortstop, he was talking earlier with the media about the role that the shortstop has along with the catcher, and that's a defensive first type of position. How do you take that into your arsenal? Obviously, you want to be the best defensive player possible, so there's not really much of a change there, but to know that that's a focus and a priority.
Yeah, no doubt. When I was younger, I think it was always offense first, but as I've grown up and kind of have learned and been around the game more, defense has kind of taken a priority over hitting for me. Just because, you know, you've got the pitcher's stats in your hands, you know, you've got you got to worry about the catch, you got to kind of make sure everybody's in the right place, and you're kind of the quarterback out there. So, you know, for me, I've just trying to been learning as much as I can from Charlie, from Louie, from Freddie, you know, just about how to play the position and play it as best I can.
Winning has been such a part of your professional career so far, obviously in single A, then last year with the Fisher Cats, and having, you know, that group together here and moving up through the system as the Blue Jays are kind of a, not a rebuild, but I'd say a transition where there's veteran players and also young players. How much do you think that's going to help this team in the future to have individuals that have come through in pressure situations and been together?
I think it's huge. I mean, you look at the Royals a few years ago, they all came up together. I mean, Hosmer, Kane, Moustakas, they all came up together, and so you could see the camaraderie and the chemistry they had as a team. And so for us, it's the same thing. You know, if we're going to be playing against those guys we beat in Double A at one point, at some point in the big leagues. So we have that confidence that we would have carried over to the big leagues, and you know, figure out how to maintain a winning culture in Toronto.
And obviously, Vladimir Guerrero Jr. still gets a huge amount of attention no matter what he does. He had an oblique strain, which is going to have him out 3 to 4 weeks. What's it been like, you and Cav and Vladdy together on this journey? Obviously, he went up last year to AAA, but you've been together for a long period of time. You have similar pedigrees. It's got to be a fun process for all of you.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, to be able to play with someone like him, you know, it is really special. I don't think a lot of people get the chance to play with a player of his caliber in the minor leagues. And so, you know, play with him and learn from him whatever I can. You know, to help him too. You know, I think that he'd be lying if he told you he hasn't learned something from me or something from Kevin or any of his teammates. So, I mean, just being around each other, I think, is making all three of us better.
That's a really good point. Like, how do you work with Cav and work with Vladdy, and that you guys play together so much that you know your tendencies, you know everything about it? Do you, you know, walk up to him and say, there's a little something off with your swing, or is it more kind of a situation where Cav will come up to you and say, you know, I'm in an 0-for right now. Do you see anything? And is that how you help each other, or is it more off the field type stuff?
I think the three of us know ourselves pretty well, so I don't think any of us are eager to point anything out to each other. I think we have confidence in each other that we kind of know what we need to work on. But I think, you know, with Kevin and Vladdy, if I ever need their help, you know, they always, yeah, man, I see this, whatever. So we're just there for each other, just like any other teammates. I mean, nothing different.
The final thing, you know, for you, last year you obviously had a very strong season, took the ball to all fields, great at shortstop, and were able to fight through some of the doldrums that exist during the course of a minor league season and stay focused. For you, do you set your goals for what you want to achieve during the course of a season, or, you know, do you set it kind of in stretches where Aaron Judge was talking about this the other day, where he, like, looks at blocks of games and says, I want to have this amount of RBIs or hit for this average during the course of a stretch. How do you go about goal setting for yourself during the course of a season?
I have them all. They're all really high. I mean, I have, you know, I want to be the best player in whatever league I'm in. I have, you know, I set my goals really high. So, like, I want to hit 400. I want to have 40 homers. I want to have this. And then also, you know, I set my weekly goals and my day goals. Mm-hmm. And for me, in one day, it's all about just grinding out that one hit or that one walk or that one run score or the one RBI. One stone base, just try to do something that day to help the team. So that's my daily goal. But, you know, for me, it's about, I always try and get to that next 10 in my batting average, to be honest. Mm-hmm. That's kind of how I go about it. So if I'm hitting 288, my goal that day is to get 290, you know, and just keeps on going. So that's how I go about it.
Bo, great to see you.
Yeah, thank you, man.
Sweet. Thanks, buddy.
That is Bo Bichette. This has been The Life with Matt Bonner, presented by Concord Orthopedics. That segment of the show brought to you by the Prescription Center, where the health of you and your family comes first. For more information, visit prescription-center.com. So next week on the show, Monday night, 6 p.m., we come to you from the TD Garden as the Celtics host the Denver Nuggets in a battle of two of the best teams in basketball. Excited about that, and I look forward to talking to you and Matt at that point in time. This has been The Life with Matt Bonner, presented by Concord Orthopedics. Want to thank our sponsors for these segments of the program, the Prescription Center, and also Douglas, Leonard, and Garvey. I want to thank our sponsors for sending me down here to spring training in Florida and Fort Myers as well. Douglas, Leonard, and Garvey, P&N Automotive, as well as the Spradling Group, Concord Parks and Rec, New England College, and the Greater Concord Chamber of Commerce. Have a great rest of the day, everybody.